Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's December 19th and 20th. We've had some mild weather leading up to the Christmas and Hanukkah holidays. And the 19th, of course, is the final of the trifecta of the arthritis Jingle Bell Run. So if you're listening to this on Saturday the 19th, you still have time to get over to Runlet School in Concord. And at 10 a.m., there is the Jingle Bell Run for arthritis. And people don't realize this, but 20% of the population in New Hampshire is affected by some form of arthritis, including a big percentage of those being children. So I learned this being a member of the New Hampshire Arthritis Leadership Council, that more children are impacted by juvenile arthritis versus juvenile diabetes. Both are not good things to have, but people don't realize that juvenile arthritis really does affect the population. And we've had some really good teen honorees at the Jingle Bell Runs a couple weeks ago. In Freeport, I ran, and then earlier in Portsmouth. And it takes courage for a young person to get out there out of his or her comfort zone and talk about juvenile arthritis. So if you're listening to this, it's still time to come down to Runlet to run the Jingle Bell Run at 10 o'clock. And then if you're interested in Habitat for Humanity, some of us will finish the run at 10 o'clock and then take our cars over to Bishop Brady. And at 11 o'clock, there is a run there, another 5K for Habitat Humanity. So we've put out some incentives for runners to do the double. Last week's show was a very interesting show. We had Matt Welch from the Manchester Monarchs, and he explained how the Manchester Monarchs are doing. And there's really been a seamless transition from the AHL to the ECHL, and the level of play is imperceptible if you're an average fan, and they are doing well. And from a business perspective, the Manchester Monarchs are doing well, and Matt was able to explain as well about the Manchester Monarchs Foundation and how they give back to the community. So it was great to see Matt, and he's a local, so to be the president of the Manchester Monarchs is really a great, great, great story. So this show gives me a great opportunity to not only talk about community partners, but also oral health. And this weekend with me is Gail Brown, who is the director of the New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition. Gail, thank you for joining me the 19th and 20th December. I'm sure you have better things to do than hang out on the weekend with Tom Raffio, but I thank you for doing so.
Well, Tom, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here on behalf of the work that I do, but on behalf of the people of New Hampshire. You, of all people in the state, know how important oral health and access to oral health is for all of us.
Yes, and that we continue to get the message out. That's one of the reasons why we've partnered with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, with the Oral Health Challenge, getting the word out, the importance of oral health, having the Tooth Fairy appear at games. And I know at my work with the State Board of Education, I mean, after the common cold, the number one reason for lost school days is oral health-related things. And, of course, from an employer's perspective, oral health is also right up there, one, whether it's first, second, or third, but one of the highest reasons for lost work days. So it's great that we recognize this. So you are the director of the New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition, and I'd like you to talk about the organizational history there. But talk about your experience. You're actually a lawyer, so how did you get into this field?
Well, it's been a long road.
A long journey.
Long journey, over 35 years. But my interest and probably...
You must have started at 10.
And my self-perception is as a teacher. And so for me to help people to find out what they need, how things work, how to get connected to benefits has always been very important for me. I started that work in social work, and I began to learn as I went through my career how important the piece of the law, regulation, is for all of us. And that it really impacts people and their work and their life, and we don't always know the way. So I went back to get the regulatory and legal background to help me to understand how to best move forward and to help advance oral health and healthcare in New Hampshire.
Now, your academic career is very impressive. So you got your law degree from what was then known as Franklin Pierce Law School, which I now know relates is called UNH. But you got your master's in social work in Seattle, correct?
Yes. My husband and I are New Hampshire natives, but we moved out to the Seattle area when we were young adults for a couple of years. We stayed for 22, and I had the opportunity then to go to the University of Washington, Seattle campus in social work. And I'll tell you, probably the most important lesson I learned there was that my University of New Hampshire undergrad in social services was an excellent, excellent program.
So you went to UNH in Durham and got your bachelor's in social services. Now, when Seattle played New England in last year's Super Bowl, who were you rooting for?
Both.
Good answer. It was a close game, so
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, you got to see both sides of the story.
You'd be great for one of those NFL commercials where they're giving out the Christmas or Hanukkah gifts, and like there's a T-shirt for the Patriots or the Seattle. That's really cool. So, okay, so you've had, in addition to all of those academic credentials, you also have 25 years of experience as either a clinician or manager or attorney. So tell us about that.
Well, I started when I first got out of my program at the University of New Hampshire, and like many young graduates, I was looking for a job, and healthcare came to me. I had the opportunity to get into a position in the nursing home field at that time, and an idea that was in my head and probably my heart was the concept of we all need to belong in our community no matter what our age, what our dreams, what we're able to do. And so that work brought me through working in the nursing home industry for many, many years. And then I found that I was able to advance, understand more about the systems. And again, it was that long road to learning about the law and regulations. So I had the opportunity to work in programs where we had programs such as daycares in the nursing home. We had horticulture therapy. We had actually, at that time, little did I know I would end up here with oral health, but we had a dental operatory right in the nursing home. I believe it was 6 chairs. So that whole concept of creating communities and the interrelationship among communities, the individual and their families.
Super. And then you did serve on the New Hampshire Children's Health Insurance Program Commission and the Legislative Commission for Pathways to Oral Health Access. So that probably really got you engaged in the importance of oral health. You know, you and I are preaching to the choir, but we obviously know that you can't have good overall health without good oral health. But a lot of people don't realize not just the self-esteem issues, but the systemic relationship. So tell us, when you were on that legislative commission, what that was about, as well as the New Hampshire Children's Health Insurance Program?
Well, the New Hampshire Children's Health Insurance Program was a few years back, but it was again around that concept of how we take care of our children, what we provide for health care for them, for access to give them the opportunity to be healthy, to be strong, and to learn. I would say that work advanced into also the work that we did with the Pathways to Oral Health Access. That was a very interesting commission that we just closed out in November. Our report is out, and the report from that commission can be found on our website, which I'll give you, www.nhoralhealth.org. We host a link for that. It is not ours, but it is the legislative commission's. And that work was involved with folks from the dental community, the policy community, the provider community, the state Department of Health, all of us looking at ways that we can increase availability of oral health services to folks out in the community. So that was a great opportunity, not only for us to teach one another, learn from one another, but also to begin to look at some of the systemic ways that healthcare is structured, how some of those barriers and or the things that help to facilitate it can move on. So we had an opportunity for folks who were educators, who were policymakers, and who were providers to all be at the table and do some assessment and some problem solving.
So if you were to put it in a nutshell, what would be the the one top actionable item coming out of that commission?
I think the top actionable item is going to be looking at ways that we can equalize the ways that we pay for and that we provide services. One thing in New Hampshire right now is that we don't necessarily have alignment of what our providers are able to provide, and I mean that across the board, with what our providers are doing with what our payers are paying. And so it's important that we take a look at that and be paying for the things that are effective, that are evidence-based, and ensuring that we create the economic pathways, if you will, to get more service out into the community. It's a lot easier for us to get one dentist or hygienist into a school where there's 40 children than it is to get 40 children out into a community traditional office.
Bringing them out into Muhammad, so to speak. So the website is nhoralhealth.org. I encourage the listening audience to tap into that. Just as an aside, in the commercial side of the dental business at Northeast Delta Dental, we agree on this evidence-based dentistry. So we've come up with this new health oral wellness program because, as you know, the two cleanings per year is not necessarily evidence-based. Some of us really need three cleanings. Some of us need additional fluoride varnish, so on and so forth. So I'm glad to see the sort of evidence-based dentistry was part of your report. Now, after commercial break, we're going to be talking about the New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition and how it was established. And that's near and dear to my heart because when the When Anthem purchased Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Hampshire, of course, it had to leave a pretty significant amount of money in a fund, and that ultimately established the Endowment for Health. And I know I was involved with one of the first boards, and one of the things I pushed for is the dental theme being one of the early themes for how to use some of this money. So it's really puts a big smile on my face to see the Oral Health Plan and how it's come to fruition. So we'll explore that after commercial break. So with me this weekend is Gail Brown, who's the director of New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition, and more after commercial break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And this weekend with me is Gail Brown, who's the director of the New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition. And again, just as a reminder, for my running friends, if you're listening to this, there's still time to go over to Runlet on Saturday, December 19th. The race does not start until 10. You can go down there, register, raise some funds for the registration fee. We'll raise funds for arthritis research. People don't realize that it's a pretty big cutback in federal funding for arthritis research, and it's really hard for people with arthritis to manage their lives. So it's not just finding a cure, but also drugs and other things to make someone's life easier. And of course, we have a teen honoree and getting the youth to talk about the fact that arthritis also affects the youthful population as well. People think it's a disease of the older population, and it is, but it can also affect the youth. And by the way, Gail, there is a connection between oral health and arthritis as well, but that'll be another program. So you're the director of the New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition. Before the commercial break, I was starting to say that the Endowment for Health was established in 2002, and one of the first themes was oral health. So take us back to 2002 and how ultimately, it led to a framework report, but also now a very active coalition.
Well, back in 2002, as you noted, Tom, the Endowment for Health and the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services brought together statewide oral health providers, policymakers, program managers, and also brought into our state some of the nationally known experts at that time. Many of them are still there. Some have gone on to retire, but it was a very robust group, if you will. And they came together with the purpose of looking at what was the status of oral health and oral health services within our state, what were the areas that there was need, and what were the things that could be done about it. And that group worked really, again, full of heart and full of passion for that topic. I know that Northeast Delta Dental was part of that charter group, as were many others who continue to be very actively involved in the coalition. At that time, it was decided that such rich information had been gathered that they wanted to put together and publish a report. And that was New Hampshire's initial statewide oral health plan. And that was a document that I have carried in my bag and waved at people and given out for years. It was the New Hampshire Oral Health Plan, a framework for action. And it was providing structure and vision for how oral health would advance in New Hampshire, and most importantly, how we would advance it together, how we as policymakers, providers, funders, et cetera, would move forward together. That plan has lasted us we were just talking about that offline, but it lasted us over 12 years and only was updated in this past year, 2015. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the very strong values around that initial plan was that it was very much principle-based. So it included lists of activities that we wanted to complete, but more importantly, it talked about how we as stakeholders with our own opinions, perspectives, visions, and needs would come forward and work together. And I think that is the heart of what the coalition still does. We look at changing perception around oral health and disease, helping people understand, as you said earlier, Tom, that oral health is a part of overall health and is probably a necessary component to it. We looked at how we want to use science effectively to build as we go forward. Oral health is an area where science is still working on how to best measure and move forward. But what we know is we can look at the things that work the best and the strongest and move those things forward. We decided that to work together, we wanted to create an effective, healthy infrastructure. That means change sometimes, change for certain professions and changes for some of us individually. We wanted to identify and remove barriers between people and those health services. Those could be transportation, they could be funding, they could be providers where providers are located, many things, but that we would work together on them and that we would use public and private partnerships to improve the oral health of those who still, despite our best efforts, do not have the full access or availability or understanding to move forward and get what is available for them.
And when we were kicking around, you know, what should be the first theme from the Endowment of Health to spend the investment income off the corpus. I mean, one of the things I said about oral health is that while certainly we still have a long way to go, it is something that you can get your hands around. By that I mean, you know, if you have access to fluoridated water, if you mm-hmm. brush and floss in between visits to the dentist, and you go to the dentist roughly two times a year, as I said earlier, that for some of us it can be one time a year, for the rest of some of us three times a year. But the point is, with fluoridated water, good dental care, brushing and flossing in between visits, and access to the dentist, all of us really could have teeth without caries. I know I have four children, and they had access to fluoridated water, and none of them have cavities or fillings. I grew up, my parents intuitively knew the importance of oral health, so I did go to the dentist and an orthodontist, but we didn't have access to fluoridated water, so like I have, you know, fillings in my mouth. So that was, to me, always appealing about oral health, in that while we certainly have a long way to go, we can remove those barriers, and through education and fluoridated water, we can really almost solve it. I hate to say it like that, but we could be right. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that we talk about is that oral health and problems with oral health are preventive. We can prevent the fact that right now decay is the number one chronic childhood illness in New Hampshire as well as in the nation. And almost all of that is preventable. And we can do it in the ways you talked about. You talked about fluoridated water. I grew up in New Hampshire, did not have fluoridated water. Was very fortunate that my mother went to work for a dentist when I was six, because I now understand the pathway my teeth would have taken until I got much into my adulthood. And so, you know, there are things that we can do. The same is true in looking at the relationship with gingivitis, because we have two types of disease that we're talking about. We're talking about the decay in the teeth, which is preventable, and as some people, or many people, don't realize, is actually transmittable from one person to another, a reason why we do need to get beyond those barriers and make those changes. We also have gingivitis, which we see a lot more in our adults within our community as well as across the nation. So
let's pause here for a second, because on dental decay being the number one chronic disease in children, we had Dr. Randy Tillman. She now works with Dr. Shannon Mills at Northeast Delta Dental, and I interviewed her on that very point, and we got a lot of feedback from the audience that they didn't, oh my God, I didn't realize it was the number one chronic disease in children. But to your point, it's preventable. And of course, the other thing that you just mentioned, you know, gum disease, even as we retain our teeth and so forth, we can get long in the tooth with gum disease, and that's an expression when you... when you have gum problems. So that's good that you mentioned that, and the fact that you understand all the community and systems factors that are necessary to, you know, get our arms around it.
I would just like to thank you. You mentioned Dr. Tillman, and Dr. Tillman has come on board within the last, I think, 6 months, maybe 8 months, onto our steering committee. And her knowledge, scientific knowledge, as well as systems knowledge, as well as her compassion, have been a great support to us on the coalition. So we're thrilled to have her on board.
Super. And she came up from Massachusetts and is now in New Hampshire. She's grown to love it just like all of us. So tell us a couple of your key projects that are going on, and then maybe spend a couple of seconds on the First Tooth project, which I know is a collaborative initiative located in New England, supported by DentaQuest. But go ahead.
Yes. So leading to the first tooth, actually, I'd like to talk a little bit about our baseline survey. We felt about 2 years ago that it would be very important to understand where these alternative, and I don't really mean them as alternative in terms of the type of service they provide, but non-traditional oral health settings where we are able to help support and provide preventive oral health. So hygienists can go out into some of these locations, dentists go out into some of these locations, but we didn't know how many programs there were out there. So we started a baseline to take a look at how many programs are there in schools, in nursing homes, in WIC settings, again, on that basis of bringing them out into
Mohammed. And just explain WIC for the audience?
Yes, I'm sorry. Women and Infants Children Program. It's a nutritional program. And the point of that, be it the WIC, the Head Start, the school, the nursing home, is it's taking the dental and oral health services to where the patients are, as opposed, again, to having to bring all of them into a traditional office. And so those are places where mothers, young mothers and children go to get their nutrition, to get education, etc. So we started to catalog those. We're at about 45 right now, and many of those programs provide not only one type of program, but perhaps more than one. I'll give you an example of Families First, which is a health center in the Portsmouth area. They have a dental operatory, but they also go into schools. They also have a child care program they visit. They also go into nursing homes. So it's this concept of where folks are going. Additionally, we have also started to catalog the medical offices where physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants are actually being trained to be able to apply fluoride varnish onto the teeth of children, on the same concept that children are naturally going to the pediatrician. It's easier to provide the service where they already are.
And that's a great way to end. I know that there was a grant from Dr. Hugh Silk, who's an actual physician in Massachusetts, and that sort of integration between the pediatrician and the dentist. I'm so glad to hear this. It's been sort of harping on that for years, and it's great to see. Gail, we've just kind of touched the surface here, so we'll have you back. Thank you for sharing this weekend with me, and thank you for all you're doing for the oral health of the citizens of New Hampshire. Thank you. Tom Raffio, thank you. Gail Brown, Director of New Hampshire Oral Health Coalition. We'll return next week with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.